I'm Karen Florin, and this is the Storyline Podcast. Today we're speaking with breaking news and Cops and Courts reporter Taylor Hartz, who on Monday night went to New Haven and met a group of Afghan refugees who had just arrived in the country. Taylor, we're so interested in hearing the details of how you got this story. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So following the news of what has been happening in Afghanistan over the past several days, our editors dispatched a few of us to work on different stories about what was happening to people in Kabul and greater Afghanistan. And I started working on a story speaking to refugee organizations in Connecticut and how they were helping folks who were already here from Afghanistan, who were on their way here, or who may be coming here in the next few months looking for refuge.
So you made a call to an organization called IRIS that works with refugees from around the world, and they allowed you to come and greet some new arrivals from Afghanistan. Tell us, and I understand that was pretty late last night that occurred. Would you set the scene for us when you first, how long were you waiting? Where were you? And what was it like when you saw them for the first time?
I spoke with a woman named Anne from IRIS, which is a New Haven-based nonprofit that helps refugees from across the globe who are relocating and resettling here in Connecticut. And during my conversation with Anne, she mentioned that there was a group of people who were flying in from Afghanistan last night and arriving in New Haven. As soon as she mentioned that, I was hopeful that that might be something I would be able to witness. I was told by Anne and a few other folks from IRIS that I was welcome to come and observe their arrival, but that I likely wouldn't be able to speak with any of the refugees or their family members, which obviously we completely understand because their safety and their security and their comfort is the main priority for everyone in a situation like this. They were scheduled to arrive in New Haven around 10 or 10:30 last night. The folks from IRIS didn't really know even at 8 p.m. last night where this group was coming from or what time they might be arriving. I arrived in New Haven at IRIS's offices just before 9 p.m. and was greeted by their director, Chris George. I was there with one other reporter, and we were told that the group was a little bit delayed. They were going to be arriving closer to 10 p.m. rather than 9 p.m. While I was waiting for the group to arrive, a gentleman who agreed to be identified by his first initial N came into the office, and he is a cousin of the family that was traveling to New Haven from Kabul yesterday. He himself came to Connecticut as a refugee 5 years ago after being threatened by the Taliban. He came on a SIV, which is a special immigration visa. That's a visa that allows folks to come to the United States and be protected here if they have lived in Afghanistan and Iraq and helped U.S. missions. So if they've worked for the United States government, they've done some sort of service to the United States, and now they are under some sort of threat or in danger because of the work that they've done for the U.S., our government will bring them here and protect them. So this gentleman, who we'll call N, came to the U.S. 5 years ago with his wife and his five children, and he was resettled in New Haven. He is working in New Haven now. His wife is a stay-at-home mom to their five children, who are all enrolled in local schools, and his oldest daughter, who is 18, is about to go off to college. They live in a three-bedroom apartment in New Haven, and last night they welcomed a cousin who they haven't seen in 5 years, his wife, and their four young children, who were ages 11, 8, 5, and 3.
So while you were waiting for the new arrivals, this man who has been in the country for 5 years and who also fled the Taliban set the scene for you. How did he tell you that he qualified for this special immigration visa?
So N was eligible for a special immigration visa because he had done work for the U.S. government.
Yes, I was a storekeeper. Yes. Simple job. They gave me a SIV visa, And after this, I came by IOM, immigration. This is the immigration department. They bring people to the United States.
While he was living in Afghanistan, and while he was doing that work, he was threatened by the Taliban. He said that he received text messages from members of the Taliban who threatened to kill him and kidnap his children if he did not leave his job working for the U.S. government.
Because I worked with the American forces, and there was my life was very bad. Taliban gave me warning that time, and they told me, "We will kill you. You should leave the job, and you should leave this province." When I talk with my boss.
So he shared with us his experience of going into hiding for quite a while and not seeing his family for months, not allowing his kids to go to school for months for fear of their safety while he waited for his SIV to be approved.
Like 3 months, my kids can't go to the school because they gave me warning. You should leave the job, you should leave this province. And also, we will kill you. If we can't find you, we will kidnap your kids.
Once it was approved, he and his wife and his children moved here to New Haven. He said it was a very difficult transition. They didn't speak English. They didn't have jobs set up here. They didn't have a car or know how to drive here in the United States. And Iris helped them secure housing, get their children enrolled in school, helped them connect with community resources and English classes. And now he said that he is very happy here. His family is happy here and they feel safe. But at the same time, they have a lot of family left in Afghanistan. He and his wife both have parents and uncles and siblings and cousins who are in Afghanistan right now and who he said are terrified. They don't know what's going to happen. They're fearful that the Taliban is going to come knocking on their door.
Right now, the situation is very weird. Nobody knows what will be happening. Nobody knows. And everybody stay at home. And everybody say what we do. They don't know about them. Everybody lost the job. Everybody lost the work. Everybody lost the business. And also, there come Taliban, but there is another people, like they rape the people. They are going to the home. They call them. They knock the door and they call them, get out. If they get out the home, they tell him, we are Taliban, we want to talk with you. And also they enter their homes. They take their money, their golden, everything. The situation is too much better.
He said he's contacting them every day by text message and phone calls, checking in on them and really just telling them to stay inside and hide until they have an idea of what might be happening or when it might be safe to go outside if that ever happens.
So all of the things that we hear are true then that occur to people who have the wrong government affiliation, let's just say, according to this man, N. He has been watching the events of the last week or so as the Taliban took over. And what did he say was on his mind?
He said he was fearful and that his family that is still in Afghanistan is very afraid. And that while he feels safe here and he's grateful to the U.S. government for allowing him to come here and resettle his life here with his family, he is afraid for what's going to happen to his family members, for what's going to happen to his country.
And by the way, so IRIS stands for Integrated Refugee and Immigrant Services. It's a nonprofit organization in New Haven. Here at the Day, we have often interviewed them about resettlement of refugees to our region. Do you have any sense of where the people who arrived Monday night will be living in Connecticut?
They're likely going to settle in the New Haven area. Chris George, the director of IRIS, explained to me that when they're bringing in refugees specifically to Connecticut, they try to always look for a U.S. tie, they call them. So whether that's a friend, a mutual friend, a family member, and this family that arrived last night has a U.S. tie in New Haven with their cousin and his family.
Good. And as we record this, Taylor, I've only had a peek at the story that you've written about it, but your descriptions of their arrival are quite vivid. Can you tell me about the family, first of all?
There were seven refugees that arrived to New Haven last night from Kabul. They flew from Kabul to Qatar to Dulles Airport in Virginia to JFK Airport in New York City, where they were then driven to New Haven by staff and volunteers from IRIS. There was a single man who traveled on his own, and then there was a family of six, a 33-year-old woman and her 44-year-old husband and their four young kids. They had two suitcases with them and a few packages that were wrapped up in blue and white tarps and tied together with yellow string. Looked like the amount of luggage that a typical couple might be traveling with, not a family of five. While I was interviewing N last night about what his experience was like coming here as a refugee, Chris George, the director, came through the office shouting, "They're here," and flung the doors open. And I followed N and Chris outside, and there was a black SUV pulling into a Sunoco gas station that was just one building past the IRIS offices in New Haven.
Looks like a family has been traveling far with little kids. Is this them? Ours is. I don't know where ours is. Hey! How's it going?
Good. How about you?
Good. Welcome.
Almost there.
There's another car?
Yeah.
Okay. Is this the wife and two kids?
Yeah.
Okay. Hello. Welcome.
The driver got out and opened the back door, and a young woman stepped out with her toddler in her arms, clinging to her neck. He was very sleepy. He was blinking in the bright lights and looking around and yawning and nuzzling up to his mother. And then another little boy got out of the van carrying a laptop bag and a little backpack. And volunteers and the director kind of introduced themselves and welcomed her to Connecticut, but she does not speak any English. There was an interpreter from IRIS who was there loosely translating until another vehicle arrived. So a few moments later, a silver van pulled up on the side of the street, and the father in this family and a little girl and another little boy got out, and the gentleman who was traveling on his own also stepped out of the van and started gathering his belongings. He was waiting for a friend of a friend to arrive who had also been resettled to the New Haven area from Afghanistan a few years ago. That friend got there maybe 10 minutes later, and they embraced each other in a big hug in the gas station parking lot and talked about what their plans were for the evening. And he said that he'd picked up some takeout from a local Turkish restaurant and made a couple different types of kebabs to make sure that he had food that he was familiar with, and they were going to go home and have a nice dinner at 10 p.m. and let his friend get some rest because he'd been traveling for nearly 36 hours, if not more.
Wow. So that's so nice to hear. You arrive in New Haven into a friend's warm hospitality and familiar food and familiar language. That's the way that you'll want to be greeted. Did you have the chance to interview any of the adults that arrived?
So I was able to, I wasn't able to speak with anyone from the family of six, from the family of five that arrived, but I was able to interview the gentleman who arrived on his own. He asked to be identified only by his first name, which is Nurullah. He came to New Haven from a province called Kandahar. So he traveled first from Kandahar to Kabul and then made his journey here. He had been working in a kind of laundry factory in Kandahar that was affiliated with the U.S. government. It was kind of unclear what that connection looked like, but perhaps it was a laundry service on a U.S. military base somehow connected to U.S. operations going on in Afghanistan. He had applied for an SIV back in 2017, and his visa was approved about 8 months ago, but he hadn't made his travel arrangements to the U.S. during that time until things started to take a turn last week, and he was able to get on one of these last commercial flights out of Kabul on Sunday morning.
Unbelievable. So just as they say, in the nick of time, he got here. And did he have any idea now of what his life would be like going forward? And could you gauge his emotions? Was he relieved? Was he happy? Was he sad?
Well, first and foremost, he seemed exhausted, very tired. Understandably, anyone would be after traveling that long, let alone under these circumstances. But he also seemed excited. I asked him if there was anything he was looking forward to about living in the United States, if there were any cities he wanted to visit or specific American foods he wanted to try. And he said that he was really excited for all of it. And he was really grateful to the U.S. government for allowing him the opportunity to come and resettle here. He was chatting a bit with his friend of a friend who he was coming to stay with, and that friend had become a truck driver when he came here as a refugee. So Nirala was chatting with his friend about maybe getting a job at the same company, going through the process of getting his commercial driver's license and becoming a truck driver as well.
Wow. So simple, but really so great after what he's just escaped, you know. Yet, I'm sure, was there any discussion of family members who were left behind and who were in danger, or family members who have died at the hands of Taliban?
So Nirala told us that he had been in touch with his parents and his siblings during his travels and was letting them know that he was safe. And when he had arrived to each destination, he said that his family was asking him a lot about what it was like in Kabul, what it was like at the airport. And he said that by the time things started to get really intense and chaotic and dangerous in Kabul, he was already inside the airport, so he couldn't really tell them much about what was going on. But he said that he was worried about his family. He said that he'd worried about their safety in the past, but now there are just so many unknown factors about what their life was going to be like in Afghanistan and what might happen to them. And he said there was really nothing he could do for them. When I interviewed N, he told us that besides the cousins that arrived on Monday night, almost his entire family is still in Afghanistan. And he said that he's been communicating with them, telling them to stay inside and kind of stay off the streets and just remain in hiding until it might be safe to go outside. He also told us that before he had been threatened by the Taliban himself, his cousin had received a similar threat from the Taliban for the work that he was doing with the U.S. government, and that just a few days after he received a text message threat from the Taliban, he was killed.
Wow. And so did you get any sense of what life was like for the mother or wife of the family that arrived? We've been hearing a lot about girls losing opportunities, women losing opportunities under the new regime, or under the new old regime, I guess, of the Taliban. Was there any talk about the women and the girls?
I didn't specifically speak with any of the refugees that came in last night or their families about what life might look like for women who are resettling here in the U.S. from Afghanistan, or women or girls who are left behind. But I did have a conversation with a woman named Anne O'Brien, who is the director of community engagement for IRIS, and she spoke a bit about how oftentimes when women come as refugees to the United States from Afghanistan, they are not accustomed to really even leaving their house without a male family member. They aren't used to having a job outside the home, which may be necessary for them to do in order to afford living in the United States. It may be necessary to have two incomes, especially if you have a few children that you're trying to support here. So one of the things that IRIS does, in addition to getting women enrolled in English language classes as soon as they arrive, is they set them up with volunteers who work as what they call cultural companions. And these volunteers will come to New Haven or whatever area they're living in, and kind of just help them assimilate to the community, show them how to take the bus to bring their kids to school, load their children onto the school bus, grocery shop, help them find which parks they should bring their kids to play in. The director said yesterday, even teaching them things that squirrels in the park are not dangerous, they're not rats, things that they just wouldn't know about life here in the United States. And that's an entire volunteer service that IRIS offers to just help people get assimilated.
Now, are the volunteers also accompanied by an interpreter, or are they people who have the language and are able to communicate? Or, you know, I'm very interested in how quickly and how soon English is acquired, and whether it's at all, since we've been a military presence in Afghanistan for 20 years, whether they come with any English at all.
So according to the folks at IRIS, most of the men who come in on SIVs speak English because they've been working with the U.S. government, and that's how they qualify for that specific visa. But typically, the women and children in the families don't speak English. Because IRIS operates through this government-sponsored resettlement program and refugee program, they have certain requirements that they have to meet, and they get folks enrolled in school and in English classes almost right away. Within a couple of weeks, the women and children are learning how to speak English and receiving job training, and they also undergo some medical screenings, get any type of health care and mental health care that they may need for any PTSD that they're experiencing.
Amazing. So housing was not an issue immediately for them, because they had the one man had his friend, and then the family had their cousin. Was it a requirement, or was it a reason for them coming here in that they had these relationships?
So typically IRIS has an apartment rented and furnished for every refugee or family before they arrive. But in this case, because there was such an urgent need to get out of Afghanistan before the airports were closed or the commercial flights stopped, IRIS only found out that these seven refugees were coming 24 hours before they touched down on U.S. soil. So they did not have time to secure an apartment for them. If they hadn't had family members in the area, they would have put them up in hotels that IRIS would have paid for. But they luckily had family in the area, and that's why they were brought in, or family. They luckily had family or friends in the area. That's why they were brought into New Haven.
I know that tens of thousands of more refugees may be safely brought out of Afghanistan. People who helped us as we tried to help Afghanistan in this effort that we're all trying to make sense of right now, I think. Taylor, did IRIS talk about how many more people they expect to greet from Afghanistan, to welcome from Afghanistan?
So at the very least, they're expecting in the next year, just in New Haven, to welcome about 400 refugees from Afghanistan and Iraq, mostly people who are coming in on SIVs. But they expect that number to grow significantly, considering what is going on in Afghanistan right now. They just can't project what those numbers will be like, but they are preparing for quite the influx in refugees into our area.
Well, getting back to Anne, the person who'd been here for 5 years, it sounded like he made remarkable strides in his 5 years. Could you talk a little bit about that?
I think one of the things that stood out to me the most about my conversation with N was that he kept repeating just that he was very happy. He said that it had been a very difficult road to get to that point and to build a life here, but that right now he was happy and his children were happy and they were safe. And as they watch what's going on in Afghanistan now, I think they were even more grateful to be resettled and safe outside of Afghanistan.
Excellent. And did religion and extremism ever come into the conversation?
It's not something we really talked about, other than to talk about the way that the Taliban was treating people when they were the ruling party years ago, and some brutality that N witnessed and experienced himself. He said that when he was working as a storekeeper, he would often be approached by members of the Taliban who would ask if he had prayed that day. And even if he had and said yes, he would be potentially beaten.
We are prayed 5 times. When they see you and on the road, on the shore, in the prayer times, they ask you, hey, did you do prayer? If you told him, yes, I did, he said, no, you didn't do prayer. Come to the prayer.
And he said that he saw the same thing happen to other men for allegedly not praying or for trimming their beards too short, or and he also saw women being approached and beaten just for being outside of their homes.
And in the last 3 or 4 days, we've all seen images on television of people who are that in that one instance, I think that what has been shown over and over again, at least, of the people clinging to a military cargo plane, right, to the point where it took off, you know, so desperate, really, to leave the country and the new regime, that they thought perhaps they could hang on to the airplane and escape. Did they describe that scene at all?
So N brought up what it was like to watch that video footage, and that was one of the times during our conversation that he became the most emotional, just recalling what he had seen on television news, these videos of people so desperately trying to leave Kabul that they clung on to these airplanes and ultimately fell off of them.
I saw a video, I think you didn't see this. The people come to the airport and they want to go outside anywhere. Just they leave the Kabul, they leave the Afghanistan. And three people, they come to the airplane and they want to take the ball. And after is the airplanes, when the airplanes playing, they fell down and three people killed.
And it seemed like a very difficult thing for him to talk about. And I can only imagine the desperation that those folks must have felt and what it must feel like to know that you were able to escape a situation where you could have found yourself feeling that much desperation just a few years later.
And Taylor, on a personal note, was this like any story you had ever covered before? And are you still processing it, or do you have some thoughts about your own experience as a reporter?
I think it's something I'm definitely still processing, but there are moments in this career where you know that you are bearing witness to something that is a real moment in history. And for me, this was one of those moments. It was definitely an emotional experience and just puts things into perspective. I think I left feeling very grateful for everything that I have and have had in my own life. Watching a mother unload everything that she now owns in this world after traveling for hours and hours with 4 children to restart her life in a place where she doesn't speak the language and doesn't know anyone, and to know that she will probably never go home again or see her family again, is something that I can't even imagine. And I am very grateful to everyone who spoke with me last night and shared this experience with me. I think that telling these personal stories, when you're looking at a story that is being watched by the entire world, that is affecting so many hundreds of thousands of people, and you're able to humanize it and look at how one family is being affected and how they've been affected over the years, over different sections of their family coming here and finding safety and comfort in a new life here, is really just a powerful thing. And it was a powerful thing to be able to be a part of in some small way.
That's amazing. We were so happy you were able to go and bring back this great story, Taylor.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.